Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters. And you never know, maybe a Twisted Mister or two. Hey, ladies, what's happening tonight?
Hi, Jean. Hi, Naomi. Going great.
Very good.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
I can.
Ah, good. My headphones are working. I'm never sure. Had trouble with them last night. Oh, my gracious.
Yeah,
there's a button on them. Yeah, there's a button on it. And I don't know, you know. And of course, you know, me being hyperactive, I have to fidget at everything, you know. So, so I never know if the button's well placed or not.
I get it.
So all's good, all's good.
I buy things that have buttons somewhere else, away from me. It's not safe for that guy. Yes, yes. So, Pam, tell us all about tonight's show.
Oh, absolutely. I'd be happy to. I ran two contests, but the first one we're going to delve into, the one that has the most rights, is the artwork of Queen Ajuak Ashavak. And I'm not 100% sure. Yep, Ashavak, yep. And yes. she was a Canadian Inuit artist. She was both a graphic artist and a soapstone carver. She was born in an Inuit village in Canada, she had a lot of challenges and sorrows in her life. Her father was murdered when she was only 6 years old. She had a total of 11 children, at least two of which were that she had adopted. But out of her 11 children, 9 of them died in childhood. When she was pregnant with one of her children, she actually got tested positive for, let me see if I can find this here, tuberculosis. So she tested positive for tuberculosis, and against her will was sent to Parc Savard Hospital in Quebec City, where she stayed for over 3 years, early 1952 to the summer of 1955. She had just given birth, and she was forcibly transferred. The baby was adopted by a neighboring family, and several of her children died while she was confined in the hospital.
Jesus.
Yes.
God bless her heart.
But she was definitely a pioneer. In fact, this couple that she had befriended, who were not Inuits, they were, you know, white people or whatever, Europeans. They encouraged her to draw, and at first she turned the opportunity down, saying that women don't draw. She was actually one of the first female Inuit artists from her area, and has gone on to become a national treasure. Her artwork is actually a national symbol it's considered a national symbol of Canada.
Wow.
Yes. And she ended up being married a total of 3 times. It sounds like what I've read that all 3 of her marriages were good. But the funniest one was her first husband. When she was 19 years old, her mother and her stepfather set her up, because this was back in the time and a culture when you were set up in marriages. And at first, she wasn't so sure about him, and would even throw pebbles at him as a sign to tell him to keep away. But she was so overcome by his kindness and his gentleness that she ended up falling in love with him. I saw her artwork, and there really wasn't, like, it's simple in its style. And yet, because she draws so much of nature and basically her life, the both the physical and spiritual side of the Inuit culture, it really just kind of spoke to my spirit. I thought it was beautiful. I wanted to see what people would get, not only from her artwork, but also be inspired by this inspirational woman. So I did put up some videos on the contest that if people wanted to watch them, they could. I do highly recommend after this show, of course, that anybody who hasn't had an opportunity to learn about her, that they go ahead and watch those videos and learn more about this beautiful woman. So, yeah, looking forward to the show.
Nice. Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, I am too. I am too. Wow, what a story. What a story.
Yep.
It's amazing. It is amazing. So,
yes.
Okay, Pam.
You know, that somebody can face that many challenges in life, you know,
Go ahead. So many challenges in life. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we need to get her a seatbelt. She fell off once already.
Apparently.
Maybe she was drinking. Put your seatbelt on, woman. Put your seatbelt on.
Oh, my gracious. Yeah.
I never said I was wrapped real tight. I can't help myself. Oh, my goodness. So, yes. So, Pam, whenever you're ready, we're here.
All right.
We're here for you, baby.
Awesome. Glad to have you both here. Well, we're going to start out with an introduction poem, which is not technically a classic poem, but it was one that I felt fit with the spirit of the artwork. And it is Cell Block on Chena River by D.G. Nanook Okpik, which, again, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing that. And it goes like this. First. Brother, remove the tool marks on your scathed skin. Brush your tattoos with nettles. Smear bearberry juice in the gashes. Crack open the jail seed. Second, tear away the bars which restrain your lean, spare life. Bend your curve in a knot. Brother, smudge your sawtooth edges. Third, cut red seaweed to conceal your gray cadaver. Start wetting your skin down after scraping. Drip your bowels of blood. Change into wolf. Fourth, the savannah sparrow flies north. In speech, smell fine grain hawthorn. Collapse your voice into bark and howl. End poem. And, you know, I don't know. There was something about this. It wasn't exactly like, and she does a lot of artwork about animals from her area, especially birds and fish. But there wasn't really anything particularly about birds or fish about this. But first of all, the poet that wrote this is also an Inuit. And a woman. And so I thought, well, that fits. You know, and also the intro song, although obviously not a woman, the singer of the song, he's also an Inuit from Canada. But there was something about these powerful imagery and metaphors that spoke on finding freedom, on finding individuality, and releasing the wolf within oneself. I felt really fit with her artwork. And Jean, what did you think of this poem?
You know, I liked the poem very much. The first, second, third, and fourth kind of got me a little turned around, but that's okay. The poem itself was really well done. I like the tear away the bars which restrain you, your lean, spare life. Bend your curves in a knot, brother. Smudge your sawtooth edges. I love the way, I love the sound of the poem and the way it makes you feel inside, because it does hit a note somewhere deep inside. It hits I don't want to say note of nature, but kind of, you know, it's kind of like being at one or in peace with, and harmony. Harmony is a good word with the world around you. And I kind of like that. I like that feel. And I think it was a great choice for an intro poem, Pam. So thanks for sharing that with us.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, I see it as really empowerment, you know, to collapse your voice into bark and howl, you know, leave your, you know, brush your tattoo with needle smear beer berry. It's like, you know, a war dance to embrace yourself, to embrace your culture, to scream out your who you are, where you come from, and just, you know, believe in everything that's in yourself. And, you know, and it's very empowering. Of course, it comes from their culture, but it's also empowering, I find, for anyone that really reads it and, you know, dwells on the lines. Like, even me, I feel like this rush of, oh, you know, it really has this effect on you, this poem, yeah. Very well written, yep. Well chosen poem, Pam.
Well, thank you. And you're right, it is a very empowering poem. So, great observation. And up next, we have Enchanted Owl by Betty Page. And Naomi, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yes. Just going to refresh my page here. Enchanted Owl, okay. Okay, Enchanted Owl. Powerful, pure light, alluring, wild, golden eyes. Soft, fluffy feathers. Pretty lemon hues. Sweet, cascading radiance. Peacock enchantment. Sky blue swirls in gold flowing melodically as musical notes. Dancing cross starlight beneath bright glowing full moon, illuminating. Lucidly swaying, feathers spread out like palm trees, warm tropical breeze. Highly exotic, mesmerizing to look at, beautiful display. Amid sweet roses, subtle soft pinks, orange reds. Serene atmosphere, vivid green gardens, aquamarine waterfalls, splashes clear, fine mist, shimmering beauty, translucent, iridescent, neon, bright rainbows, ocean waves crashing, pretty birds walk to and fro, mystical magic, wandering slowly, moving methodically. I'm so hypnotized. End poem.
Great read, Naomi, and what a wonderful write by Betty Page. And your thoughts, Jean?
You know, I think there's some great imagery in this, and I like her use of colors. She starts out by talking about an enchanted owl, powerful, pure light, alluring, wild golden eyes, soft, fluffy feathers. And then she moves into this peacock enchantment. And goes into all these colors. And kind of, it's kind of like seeing a rainbow of, it's nothing formal. It's not like brush strokes necessarily on a canvas. But you're seeing all these colors just coming into play on this background. And she goes through them so well. You know, lucidly swaying feathers spread out like palm trees. Warm tropical breeze, highly exotic, mesmerizing to look at, beautiful display. You know, and then she gets into the sweet roses, subtle soft pinks, orange, reds, and a serene atmosphere. She really does paint a wonderful picture with all of this. But the use of colors throughout really, as I say, I could kind of see it hitting a canvas somewhere and not necessarily giving me an image per se. It's just these... Although she words things, don't get me wrong, aquamarine waterfalls. But, you know, when you're going through all these different colors, I don't necessarily see a waterfall. I'm seeing green and aquamarine and, you know, pink and orange and reds. And I'm just seeing them kind of lightly splatter this canvas in a good way, really. And I think it was just really well done by Betty. So thank you, hon, for sharing with us. Where's the sound lab, huh? You didn't give us any words on this one, huh? No. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Too funny. Great comment, Dean. And Naomi, your thoughts.
Well, if I remember correctly, because it's last week, and, you know, Enchanted Owl was the name of that art piece, wasn't it? The art piece
it
of
was,
the owl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And if I remember correctly, when I went onto the artist page, she had done that owl in different colors, didn't she? Like, she didn't
she did.
Yeah.
And it ended up being put on a stamp in Canada. And
yeah.
Many, of course, you probably being from Canada would know all about this more than I actually would. But,
I'm not sure, but I know.
Pieces of art.
Go ahead, Sam. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say it's one of her most famous pieces of art and one of her most treasured.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. So, you know, that's what I thought it made me think of that, you know, Betty Page. I wonder if she did research like I did, because that's the reason why she put in all these different colors into the poem, because that art piece was actually painted in so many different hues, and different colors were used to make that art piece over and over and over again. But that was just an idea that went through my mind. I was just wondering. But yeah, like Phil was saying, you know, absolutely beautiful use of color throughout this poem. You know, there's so many beautiful stanzas. I really like the ocean waves crashing, pretty birds walk to and fro, mystical magic, wandering slowly, moving methodically. I'm so hypnotized. And it comes back to the art, which is so hypnotizing. So beautiful write by Betty Page here indeed.
Oh, I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And yeah, I do like those end lines, because it really, one of the things about that artwork, Enchanted Owl, is it's always painted in such a way as if the owl is making eye contact with the person observing the artwork. And I think those end lines really capture that. I also like lucidly swaying feathers spread out like palm trees, warm tropical breeze, highly exotic, mesmerizing to look at, beautiful display. And her use of colors and imageries really does stand out. I also like the phrase peacock enchantment, because it, to me, the tail feathers of that owl painting is spread out almost like you would expect how a peacock's feathers are spread out. So I think Betty definitely either did her research, or she just has keen insight when it comes to observing artwork. Either way, she's really captured the essence of the artwork while painting her own individual picture with her words. So very well done. And now the next question is did I go grab the next poem?
I don't know, but in the room, see,
I know, right?
This imagery is so inspiring. I feel like we can all inspire and ink from using such powerful imagery, something to aspire to indeed. See, just, yeah, you know, see, now everybody's looking in the room. See what all was said in there? See? Mm-hmm. Yep.
I like it. Great observations there, CM. Very cool. All right. Up next, we have A True Pioneer Defies Obstacles That Defy Others by Oshini Creations. And we do have a recording for that whenever you're ready, Jean.
There we go.
This poem is entitled A True Pioneer Defies Obstacles That Defy Others by Oshin Wright.
A true pioneer is one that defies obstacles that defy others. A Shiva's artistic journey is an embodiment of this truth. So drink deeply, from the lessons the book of her journey covers. Let them be the core of your lifestyle once becoming a pioneer is your goal. The tapestry of Ashiva's journey began to be weaved within her young adult years. After she was given the invitation to venture into the drawing world. At first, she hesitated, but after encouragement made contact with her ears, she chose to defy obstacles beginning her venture to the drawing world. Obstacles such as I'm too old, it makes no sense. I start now. Obstacles such as I don't know how, it makes no sense. I start now. Obstacles such as I cannot draw, it makes no sense. I start now. Ashiva chose the pioneer's path, defying obstacles that defied others. Ashiva's journey was seasoned with a strong and passionate focus as she concentrated on breathing life to images in her mind. With this attitude, she tirelessly labored, never losing sight of her love, never losing sight of her love for her artistic journey. Now she is an icon, an ambassador, famous for her drawings, one of which has been described as an outstanding symbol of Canadian art. This is all because she chose the pioneer's path. She chose the pioneer's path, defying obstacles that defied others.
Wonderful reading right there, Oshini. I have to say, there was a real great rhythmic quality to her read that I just enjoyed. It really made me want to get up and dance. And for the contest, as I had mentioned, I had put in 4 videos. And I had said that they weren't technically prompts, but if anybody wanted to watch them and they were inspired to write something up because of them, then that was absolutely fine. And I'm glad to see that Oshini was inspired. In fact, she put in her AN, this poem was inspired by the 4 video links posted in the guidelines, as well as the owl drawing by Queen Ojak Asavak, because that is the drawing that was stated to be a symbol of Canadian artistry. The videos about her life fascinated me. That's why I penned this poem. And I was so glad to read that. And Naomi, what did you think of this poem?
Oh, my gracious. It's as if she rocked it. I can understand how you wanted the need to dance, because me too, I was just like cheering along to it, it was like it was chanted out, like in a song. I just love Oshini's voice, oh my gracious, and her determination and her fierce. You feel her spirit coming through, and when she's talking. And what a beautiful, tribute to the artist, the obstacles that she overcame, she repeats a lot, I'm too old to start now, and I think that can, be relatable to a lot of us in our lives. Sometimes we say, oh no, I'm too old to start something new now, but come on, why not, go for it. And she said this with such fierceness that I think, she empowered everybody that heard this, this SoundCloud. So go, Oshini, and a beautiful, beautiful write and a wonderful tribute.
It really was. It really is. Great comment there. And Jean, your thoughts? Are you on mute, Jean?
I believe I was. You know, you can bet your boots when I do an audio, I always put myself on mute. And that's when I usually forget to take myself off mute, too. Just I thought I'd share. I thought this was a wonderful write by Oisin. Wonderful tribute to a strong woman, a great artist, and a wonderful inspiration. I kind of picked it up here at Ashivak's journey was seasoned with a strong and passionate focus as she concentrated on breathing life into images in her mind. With this attitude, she tirelessly labored, never losing sight of her love, never losing sight of her love for her artistic journey. Now she is an icon, an ambassador, famous for her drawings, one of which has been described as an outstanding symbol of Canadian art. I think that it was a beautiful tribute piece to Ms. Ashivak. I'm not even going to attempt the full name. But, I think it was really well done. And what a powerful presentation Oisin, you know, gave us to put up. Wonderful job all the way around. So thank you very much, Oisin. That's it.
Absolutely. Great comment. And I have to agree with both of you. I mean, it is an amazing tribute to a brilliant artist, a woman who was ahead of her time, who really took a chance. And I love the presentation in Oisin's read, how she did it with such power and such enthusiasm, and as I said, a great musical quality. And I liked that part that you mentioned, Jean, but another part I also liked was the tapestry of Ashivak's journey began to be weaved within her young adult years after she was given the invitation to venture into the drawing world. At first, she hesitated, but after encouragement made contact with her ear, she chose to defy obstacles, beginning her venture to the drawing world. You know, wonderful line, brilliant tribute, and just very well done.
Nice. It's all good.
Absolutely. And up next, we have Inuit Owl by Ken Smith. And Jean, would you go ahead, please, and give that a read?
I will give it a whirl. Inuit Owl by Ken Smith. The screech in the night as it lands in your open window, wings flapping like the sides of a sealskin tent. An omen haunting mysterious of impending danger of a coming change. Inevitable like winter ice, no longer a close family member, but a visiting tourist, arriving late and leaving early. The glowing yellow eye, a rock candy bright as the sun, an entered passage to the afterworld. It's in sight in the dark. Don't regret yourself saying, I don't give a hoot. End poem.
Great read there, Jean. I did, you know, it's funny that ending because of the idea of the slogan, you know, give a hoot, don't pollute.
Right.
It's funny and humorous at the same time, a serious message throughout. But I like how, I have to say, I like how he presents the owl not only as a physical, more than just a physical, but rather a spiritual element. The idea of the owl as an omen, a messenger of death, a speaker from the underworld. An omen haunting mysterious of impending danger of a coming change. Inevitably, like winter ice, no longer a close family member, but a visiting tourist arriving late and leaving early. And I like that stanza there because, to me, it speaks on how we've gone through changing times where what was once considered just a part of the family's culture becomes a tourist destination, and our times change. And our world changes. So brilliant write and very well done. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, that's so well said, Pam. You know, sadly, you know, the culture here, although, you know, these past few years, I think more than, you know, ever before, these past few years, we've seen here in Canada a real openness towards, you know, the Inuit culture, the American Indian culture, that, you know, towards the whether it be the Hurons or the Iroquois or the Mi'kmaqs from Prince Edward Island, or, you know, we've had all the other, you know, tribes. We have an opening towards an acceptance to embrace their culture, and even in schools, their culture is. The children get to read more of their culture, and, you know, so we're accepting them more and more. There's this ouverture. Is that a word in English, ouverture?
Ouverture?
Yeah, it is. Okay. Okay. Well, there is, you know, this overture towards this culture, and it's, you know, and whether it be through the arts or through the music, or, you know, now when we have a galas here in Quebec, we have, you know, a special segment for their music, so that they can be, you know, rewarded for their music and stuff like that. So, yeah. So there's you know, we were embracing them more and more. But yeah, coming back. So that's wonderful what you said. But yeah, it is. It does remain like this mystical place for tourists to invade, and, you know. But we should be able to see more beyond that, you know. That's just what my little saying there. But sadly, yeah, it is more like a tourist destination now. What I like about this poem is that it includes parts of the Inuit culture, like when he says, like the owls, you know, the flapping of the, like the sides of a sealskin tent. I like that, you know, the seal skin tent. And, yeah, and I wonder if, you know, like you described it really well, you know, the omen, the way he described the owl, you know, they gave it a meaning. But, you know, I wonder in their culture, because I didn't read enough into it, you know, the meaning, really what the meaning of the owl has for the Inuit people. But I'm just wondering if it is, like he says in this poem, like an omen, a haunting mysteriousness to an impending danger, change. I'd like to really know that. I think I'm going to, you know, dig in deeper maybe after the show if either of you don't know.
Yeah.
and just. Just see really what the owl represents to the people. But, you know, really great write, and I really enjoyed this all the way through. Bravo, Ken Smith.
And that is a great comment. And, you know, although I don't know for sure, because unfortunately I don't always get around to doing as much research as I should, I would guess that, like most indigenous cultures, which oftentimes their religions, their spirituality is focused around animals, that most likely the owl does have some significance to it. But what that significance is, yeah, I'm not really sure, but, you know, there definitely, I know, is many cultures in which the owl is oftentimes a messenger of warning of oncoming doom. And yeah, and Ken's from Canada, so he might know that kind of stuff. You never know. But great question, great observation. And Jean, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Thanks, hon. I thought it was, I really enjoyed the piece. I thought it was nicely penned. And I kind of picked it up here, an omen, haunting, mysterious, of impending danger, of a coming change. Because owls are symbolic in that way in a lot of cultures. I don't know where they stand in this specific culture, but it sounds very familiar to me. An inevitable, like winter ice, no longer a close family member, but a visiting tourist, arriving late and leaving early. You know, it's just pop in and pop out. You know, it's not like it's something that is there and just lingers. So I think this was really a great piece. And I also did like that first stanza, you know, the screech in the night as it lands in your open window, wings flapping like the sides of a sealskin tent. I did love that. I think that that really did kind of put it in a perspective from the beginning. But I really like the omen kind of thoughts in there. So very well done, Ken, and thanks for sharing with us. Great job.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I just looked it up, Pam. And they say the owl in the Inuit culture and spirituality is a source of guidance and wisdom. Some Inuits believe the owl safely shepherds the spirits of the dead to the afterworld. So, yeah.
There you go.
Oh, cool. I like that. I'm glad you looked that up. Thank you. Very cool. Learn something new. Well, up next we have Floral Passage by Ursula McCabe. For artist Kwinujak Asavak, a few humans of the far north carry loon blood in their veins. Who gave who the thick bones, we'll never know. But in the frigid waters, the heavy bones of loons give them strength. In the oceans and bays of the Arctic, some understand how the loon wails for her mate. Across the tundra lakes, her passion flower awaits, her feathers flicked back. A long neck leans west, her low slung body says yes. The north creatures feel the heavy melt of snow, hear the glaciers calve. Thick sheets of ice fall, their hearts are full. Their hearts are full. June is a blossom, a lure to all around. The full moon flowers and poem. And what a beautiful write by Ursula. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I like this a lot. I think that it was a great take on that prompt. Where is it here? A few humans of the far north carry loon blood in their veins. Who gave who the thick bones? We'll never know. But in the frigid waters, the heavy bones of loons give them strength in the oceans and bays of the Arctic. And I love how the next stanza is as well. Some understand how the loon wails for her mate across the tundra lakes. Her passion flower awaits. Her feathers slip back. A long neck leans west. Her low slung body says yes. Great imagery. And I think that it captures the image very well, I think. So excellent job, Ursula. I really liked what you did here. Great write.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, me too. Wonderful comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, yes, I'm getting back to the poem, Pam. I was looking up loons. Oh, my gracious, I'm awful tonight.
No,
I'm all over the place. I wanted to know if loons made it for life, but apparently they don't because, you know, but they'll change territories if their mate dies or somewhat. They change places and they search for a new one because they're adapting to the reality, I guess, to the world, you know, that's polluted and everything, and to be able to survive their they are just adapting so that they do remate with some with another bird
okay.
there with another yeah
I didn't
oh, I'm
know
trying
that.
To yeah I thought they made it I got it they made it for life too but I guess not oh. Oh, well.
That would be pretty romantic if they did. They sound like they did for life. Yeah. But the one thing I learned about loons that I didn't know until I read Ursula's poem over a week ago is that they don't have hollow bones like most birds. I always thought they did, and when I read her poem, I went, let me look that up just to confirm. And sure enough, they do not have hollow bones because they need the heavier bones to be able to dive down to get food.
Huh. There's something.
Yeah. That's neat. Yeah. Well, I really love this poem, you know, and I thank you for that because that gives that a whole new meaning. Who gave who the thick bones will never know, but in the frigid waters, the heavy bones of loon give them strength in the ocean and bays of the Arctic. And, you know, if you take that, no wonder the loon is, you know, in the Inuit culture, because my gracious, they have to have thick bones and strong bones and thick skin to endure those harsh, bitter, frigid, you know, ice cold, freezing temperatures and to have survived so long, you know, the Inuit people have. So, in that way, the loon is a great, symbol for them. I think, you know, like them, it does, endure too and persevere. I really like all this, the way through, you know, the imagery she has in here and, the heart that you put into this rite, just beautiful all the way through, like Ursula can write and, just amazing, amazing rite. The last stanza, their hearts are full. June is a blossom, a lure to all around. The full moon flowers. That's just beautiful way to finish off the poem. It's amazing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And yeah, this has beautiful and brilliant imagery and metaphors all the way through. I really like how Ursula connects the Inuit culture with the loon. Especially with who gave who the thick bones, we'll never know. But in the frigid waters, the heavy bones of loons give them strength in the oceans and bays of the Arctic. And then leading it into the next line, some understand how the loon wails for her mate. There is something, like even though we just learned that, you know, loons don't mate for life, there is something so beautiful and eerie and sad about the call of a loon, as if there's something or someone that they have lost that they're crying out mm-hmm. for. And I think Ursula does a wonderful job of capturing that. So excellent write and very well done. All right. And up next we have Drowning in Love with Alzheimer's by Jaskaran. And we have a recording for that, Jean, whenever you're ready.
Okie dokie. Here we go.
There is much pain to endure by watching our brain suffer Alzheimer's disease. Their pain or pressure leaves. Their pain or wrong mood of country loss. However, in the midst of heartache, there is one thing that Alzheimer's can't take away. Termination or tender touch. Hard melting heart and exuberant smile on the face. This is a hypothetical of theory, all two souls entwined into each other. This is called dining in love with alignment. Where have you gone? Seeing daring of the winter moon, tender parties, damn night on my skin. Everything gone, I'd live upon the couch, I'd take a new walk dent in me, but still looking at the man who is on the earth. Now came the new word as God and his bare clear waterfall into a ripple, facing a heart that is far green candles. Your eyes ask, who I am, as the rocky wandered in the room, with the dead of roses moving barefoot. Your sweat soaked hand taking the mid of the dew on the edges of the lips, hot breath and thought. Sun dips and grass fades, apricot called for me, as I see the memories between mine. Even if the stars went black, and if the sun were to shine no more, you'd always find way to your heart, no matter how far it would.
Wonderful read and write there, Jaskaran. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Naomi, what did you think of this poem?
Yeah, wow, this is really touching. You know, if you relate, you can relate it back to the Inuits. You know, there, it's like, you know, I know he's talking about Alzheimer's here, but if you relate it back to the Inuits, really, you know, it's, you know, their culture is being lost in a way that, you know, in a way that somebody loses themselves to Alzheimer's, and, you know, they're fighting. Of course, you know, we're accepting more, we're learning more about them, but it's being lost. And just as, you know, Alzheimer's is related to in this poem, even if the stars went back black and if the sun were to shine no more, we would always find ways to our hearts, no matter how far the shore. I really love the way he incorporates elements of nature all throughout the poem, like the waterfalls, the ripples, the pine needles, you know, that pierce the heart, the purple, withered purple roses, the tickling humid droplet dews on the edge of my lips. Just, you know, the sun that dips into glass lake, apricot clouds, oh, cover me as I steal your memories but leaving mine. Just absolutely beautiful, like Jaskaran can write. Oh, my gracious. You know, such a talented poet, and this is just absolutely brilliant, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. Wonderful comment there. And yeah, he does a beautiful use of imagery. And I liked how you mentioned the connection between the loss of culture and the loss of memory. So great observations there. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, as always, I think that this was a beautiful piece by Jaskaran. You know, as I was reading it, I'm going, Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful imagery all the way through. And I think it kind of, at the last two stanzas, sun dips the glass in glass lake, apricot clouds cover me as I steal your memories, but leaving mine. Even if the stars went black and if the sun were to shine no more, we would always find a way to our hearts, no matter how far the shore. I thought they were lovely lines. And, the fact of I steal your memories, but I leave mine. I think that was kind of a neat concept in my mind. And I thought it was just very well done. Yeah, I'm not sure where exactly. I mean, Naomi had the great way of tying them together, this and the prompts. So I think that probably has a lot to do with it. But just a very well done piece and very well written. Okay. And thanks for sharing, Jaskaran, as always. Excellent job.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, yeah, absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I like this. And one of the ways that I also thought it connected was I thought, well, first of all, Jaskaran, it might be in part a personal thing to him. He might know somebody and, you know, have a grandparent or parent that's, or someone who's going through Alzheimer's. But I also thought, because a lot of times, the majority of the time, Alzheimer's happens to elderly people. And I thought about the fact that many indigenous cultures, including the Inuit, have a high regard and a sense of respect and, you know, of taking care of the and respecting the elderly within the family. And so I kind of thought it connected in that way, too. But I really like his opening stanza with, "Where have you gone, steam rising off the winter moon, scent of foliage, damp night on my skin." And then also, "Your confusing words as quietness seeps like a clear waterfall into ripples, piercing my heart like fall green pine needles." I mean, brilliant imagery and metaphors, and also an emotional depth that speaks on what it's like to lose somebody. I mean, even before they physically pass away, you have started to lose the person that you once knew. So amazing write and very well done. All right. And it's good to see Robbie's poetry and CM25 hanging out in Late Night Poets and commenting on the poetry. Good to see you both. Thank you. And up next we have "I Might Be an Oscar Mayer Wiener." Well, that's definitely a funny title, by Julie Buck. And Naomi, would you give that a read for us, please?
Okay. "I'll hoot it for you. I think I'm an owl. Not for sure, but I am some type of fowl. I've made of chicken feet and a rooster comb, eagle talons, turkey feathers, and I just want to get home. I'm a combo platter with big black eyes. I'm being flustered when I said to be wise. It's fine being scattered. I won't let it go to my head. Otherwise, this confused owl is going to bed. What the hell am I? I don't want to ask my meaner. But with all those animal parts in me, I might be an Oscar Mayer Wiener." End poem.
Great read, Naomi. Julie definitely has a fun sense of humor. And I can see it because this painting here, it's actually of an owl and two woodpeckers standing like next to behind it. But they're so close together that it basically looks like one creature who's having an identity crisis. And I did like the humor in those end lines, "but with all these animal parts in me, I might be an Oscar Mayer Wiener." But I also thought the lead lines were clever. "I'm a combo platter with big black eyes, being flustered when I'm said to be wise." And I thought because owls sometimes can look quite confused, you know, but they are a symbol of wisdom, but sometimes with those big wide eyes, they look slightly confused. So interesting. Great, fun take on the prompt. And Jean, your thoughts.
You're too freaking funny sometimes, I'll tell you. I said freaking too. Don't let anybody tell you anything different. Before I say anything, I want to tell you we have a caller. Hello, 502. Is that you, CM?
Yes, hello.
Hello, welcome
Hi,
to the party.
CM. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Welcome.
Did you
thank
hear the poem,
you,
CM?
Yeah, I did. I just thought it was really, really funny. Oscar Mayer Wiener, such comedic relief. But, I mean, if you read in between the lines of everything that's being said, I feel like there's, like, you know, a deeper meaning in all of that, you know. "I'll hoot it for you. I think I'm an owl. Not for sure, but I am some type of fowl." And, you know, I take that as, you know, someone who is lost, you know, and they're honestly, they're just trying to find themselves with, I just want to get home in the second stanza there. So, yeah, but I appreciate that it was so lighthearted in tone, but it allowed people to read deeper as well.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yep. Great comment there. Great observation. And Gene, your thoughts?
Well, I have to say, I thought it was pretty funny. I'm made of chicken feet and a rooster comb, eagle talons, turkey feathers. I just want to get home. I'm a combo platter with big black eyes, being flustered when I'm said to be wise, you know. But, yeah, the last stanza really just wraps it all up and gave me a good laugh. So, you know, what the hell am I? Right there. I've said that a few times in my life. In my 61 years, I have asked that frequently. But, no, I think that
that is a very relatable question.
Yeah, exactly.
I felt the same way many times.
You're right. And, you know, I also know people who should have asked it many more. But on the other side of the screen, not on this side, you know. But it was a fun poem by Julie, and she really, I think she had a little bit of fun with it, trying to bring out all the different options and, you know, and all the different things that she saw within the image itself. So great job, Julie, and I give you credit for, you know, definitely being creative on the piece itself. So great job.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have to agree. She was definitely having fun with that. And
absolutely.
Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, my gracious. You know, between the chicken feet and the rooster comb and everything else she has in here, I'm just wondering about that last hot dog I ate. Oh, yuck.
Mm-hmm.
What was in that wiener? yeah, but you know, if you see the wiener factory and how they make the wieners, I'm telling you, you'd never touch a hot dog again in your life. It's so disgusting what goes into it. But that aside, I love what is it Sam? Chem. Okay, I love that you ran into the poem about, you know, the being lost part and searching for getting your way home, you know, that dark, deeper meaning that you saw that you read into the poem. That was really great. And, you know, I really liked the imagery that Julie put into this poem, you know, the different and the feeling also and the humor. So wonderful write here by Julie Buck for sure.
Absolutely.
Amen.
And up next we have Chirp Chirp by K.S. Heartless. And CM, would you go ahead and give that a read for us, please?
For sure. Chirp, chirp. Chirp, chirp. The weak old chick wobbles out at red dawn. His golden fleece not yet feathered, his newborn limbs barely bent, he makes his way round life's circular pen, growing strong on homegrown rations. During day's revolution, the chick discovers his own reflection in a shallow water, in a shallow water, sorry. As he wades a little farther, his rays descend, but one loud cluck brings the cockerel back between his mother's legs. She's a broody hen, a white cloud in the center of infinite blue sky plumage.
Nice.
Great, great read there. And what a wonderful write by by K.F. Heartless, who wrote to the painting The Sun's Return, and at Sun, S-U-N. And, yeah, I really like her inspiration here. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, the I don't know why, but the wandering off of the newborn, you know, something, a fact that I have to share with you about the Inuit culture is that they massage their young children's legs like over and over again. Well, they used to, I don't know if they do it again, they still do it, but they used to massage their young children's, like the young born children's legs and limbs. They massage them and massage them so that they get stronger and stronger so that they can walk the earliest as possible, so that, you know, because of the where they live way up there, you know, to walk is everything, you know, to get around, and it works because we did it with our firstborn child Pam, and she was walking by 8 months and a half, like, and she was running at 9 months. So it really, really works. But, you know, that's just, I don't know why that came to mind when I was reading this. But, maybe because it's about newborns there. But anyway, that's just a piece of information that I wanted to share.
Cool.
But this is really a beautiful rite. You know, the red dawn, his golden fleece not yet feathered, his newborn limbs barely bent, he makes his way round life's circular pen, growing strong on homegrown rations. During day's revolution, the chick discovers his own reflection in a shallow water. I can't stop but thinking, you know, that, you know, there's a deeper meaning into this, you know, like finding oneself, your reflection, finding your own identity here and weaved into this poem. And you know, and I really applaud the writing. It's fabulous writing, wonderfully written to that prompt. Beautiful.
I like that. Really great observations. And yeah, there does seem to be a deeper message within the imagery. So great comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
I think that K.F. Heartless did a nice job with this. And I think it was a great reflection of her chosen prompt. Not necessarily like an absolute reflection, but I think that she told a tale based on that prompt, and she did a fine job doing it. And I picked it up here. During day's revolution, the chick discovers his own reflection in the shallow water. As he wades a little farther, his rays descend, but one loud cluck brings the cockerel back between his mother's legs. She's a broody hen, a white cloud in the center of an infinite blue sky plumage. And when you think about that, now I'm not sure what the audio is at the bottom here, but Sun's Return, it says. But so I guess she went on the Sun's Return. But, you know, you have the blue sky and you have the white clouded image that's supposed to be the mother, and the child returns to her. So I think she really hit on the title of the piece and the actual image itself. I think she did a fine job pulling on it all together. So nice job, K.F. Heartless. Really well done. And thanks for sharing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. Yeah, I really like this because it is, as you were saying, Gina, a great reflection of the chosen prompt. And I like how, I think what touches me about this is that it speaks to me on a relationship between mother and child, especially a mother and son, where, you know, you want to be, you're there for them and you'll protect them when they need it, but you know that they're going to venture out on their own. You know, they're going to want to run ahead of you and, you know, test their own wings and test their own strength and courage. And I really like that where he says, as he wades a little farther, his rays descend, but one loud cluck brings the cockerel back between his mother's legs. She's a broody hen, a white cloud in the center of infinite blue sky plumage. And so I like how it speaks on the connection between the sun and the sky, almost as, you know, as the little owl is the sun and the mother owl is the sky. But it also speaks on that connection between mothers and sons. So wonderful, right, and very well done. Yeah, I have to say I'm really pleased with the directions that people have taken throughout, you know, this contest connected with her artwork. I'm very pleased and very impressed. And up next we have Ravens on the Wing by Weaver of Dreams, and we have an audio for that.
Yes, we do. Here we go.
Five ravens, beaming like sunsets ablaze, clothed in tangerine light, a mystical haze. One in the darkness stood stark and alone, a raven, his mission very much unknown. He'd long for feathers and shades of black, to meld with the night, take a different tack. He fluttered his wings to make them all see the beauty in black, how alluring it could be. But the others resisted, they held their ground. One and all wanted to be tangerine and proud. We don't even have a group name, did you know? You'd be known as a murder if you were a crow. There's a mischief of magpies, larks are a bevy. We could be an unkindness, if not taken already. That's not a great name, but it's not as bad as the others. Next we'll dye your feathers, become a band of brothers.
Great read and write there, Kate. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Naomi, your thoughts? Are you on mute, Naomi?
Yeah. Can you come back to me, Pam? Come back to me.
No problem. And your thoughts, CM?
To be honest, I love the group name, the group name part where, you know, you'd be known as a murderer if you were a crow. I just thought that line was so, so powerful and how it ties into loss as well and how that can tie, you know, back into the topic that we're talking about tonight, you know, of loss and she lost. You know, like you said earlier, she had, I think it was 9 children, and she lost one of them, right?
She had 11 children, and she lost 9 of them.
Oh, wow. So yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, really, really powerful. And I think this is one of her more, out of all the images that was posted, this is a really powerful and simple image with so many different messages to take behind it. So I think this was a great poem and a great pen.
It really is. Absolutely. Great comment. And your thoughts, Jean?
Keep telling me. Now you want me to do thoughts. That costs extra. Wow. I thought it was a clever piece based on the prompt. I think she stepped up to the chosen image in a great way here. I had to start somewhere, so I went. But the others resisted. They held their ground. One and all wanted to be tangerine and proud. We don't even have a group name, did you know? You'd be known as a murderer if you were a crow. There's a mischief of magpies. Larks are a bevy. We could be an unkindness if not taken already. That's not a great name, but it's not as bad as the others. Next we'll dye your feathers. Become a band of brothers. I thought there was something kind of fun in there in my mind. I thought it was, I think maybe it's the way it reads. that it just gives it a fun edge to me. And I thought it really suited the prompt, you know, the poor one little, you know, dark raven sitting there going, yeah, we'll fix you up. We'll dye all your feathers, you know, instead of him. Can't bleach him, you know, can't make him a bleach blonde. So that's the way to go. But I really did. I liked the way this was done. And I enjoyed the flow of it. Yeah, you know, the rhyme and meter was good. So as always, great job.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have to agree. And you're right, it is a great take on the chosen prompt. I like how, because if anybody who's not looking at the painting, it's a painting of, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6 crows or ravens, and 5 of them are orange and only one is black. And so she saw that, I think, and thought of the idea of individuality. One in the darkness stood stark and alone, a raven his mission very much unknown. He longed for feathers and shades of black to meld with the night, take a different tack. And I like how those lines do speak on individuality, but at the same time, I think it also speaks on the idea of sometimes when we ask people to all keep being an individual just like we are, we eventually end up being too much the same. So great, great right there, Katie. Very well done. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like what you had to say, Pam. I was going on those similar lines, you know, of individuality. And sometimes, you know, you just, it's better to maybe, it is great to flaunt, well, to show your individuality all the time, you know, but sometimes it's good to just be able to fit in too, to be able to bond, to have brothers to get along with, you know. You're stronger in numbers most of the time, you know. So, you know, I think maybe this poem touches on that, you know, but it's not as bad as the others. Next will die, your feathers become a band of brothers. Yeah, you know, it's great to have that band feeling, that bond to others. And, you know, survival, really, when you come to think of it, you know, to be able to fit together, work as a society, work well with others. Keep your individuality, but also be open-minded towards others. And, you know, I really liked Weaver's poem and where it took me to. So it took me in different directions. And I love her, you know, her use of course, the names there, the, you know, the mischief of magpies, the bevy and unkindness, and, you know, the murder of crows. But it's an unkindness of ravens, isn't it? Yeah.
It is, yes.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Yeah. Yeah, I got that. I didn't know that till I listened to, what was the show? Oh my gracious, there's a show on TV, and there was the basketball team was the Ravens, and he wrote a book called The Unkindness of Ravens. The Scott brothers there, I forget the name. In French, it's translated into the Scott brothers. Oh, it's One Tree Hill. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, One Tree Hill. I didn't know that. And then I started looking up all these names to the different animal groups. So, yeah, I it's neat that she put that in there. So amazing writing and brilliant, brilliantly put together. Bravo, Katie.
Absolutely. Great comment. And up next, we have Never Look Back by Kind Poet. And Jean, would you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. You got to give me a minute, though. I'm not sitting here. And here I go. I might get all the ones with the loons. He's trying to tell me something. The saying. I'm writing this on my calendar, Ben. Watch it. That's why they pay me the big bucks, because I'm the comic relief around here. Anyway, this is called Never Look Back by Kind Poet. I made one more mistake today. I looked back and I saw a past mistake smirking at me with satisfaction. One destructive mistake that survived. Friends had cautioned me years ago to never look back at my selfish past. Yet I looked back today. That one harsh memory taunts me with renewed hatred as I try to race forward. And now I stand frozen like death. My wicked past gloats and dances while I order it to flee from my presence. Yet the past found me suffering. It stalked my weakened state with glory, and it now tries to catch up to me. I can try to escape it again, but then it will hunt me with mockery unless I learn to cut it from my identity. End poem.
Great read, Jean. And I really like the way that Kind Poet was inspired by this artwork, because the loon in the painting is looking backwards. And I like that she saw that as a metaphor for being too focused on our past. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, the loon is looking back, and you know, she transported that to us, our humans, as you know, we can look back and stay stuck there, you know, in our past, and have a hard time moving forward. And she says that so brilliantly. And now I stand frozen like death. My wicked past gloats and dances while I order it to flee from my present. And yet the past found me suffering. It stalked my weakened state with glory, and it now tries to catch up to me. You can't dwell on the past. You know, I always say it's hard sometimes, but I always say, you know, move forward, move to the positive light. You know, there's always something better waiting. And but yeah, a wonderful take on that prompt for sure. You know, very clever and outstandingly very creative. So well, wonderfully well done. Bravo, Kind Poet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. NCM, your thoughts?
Let's see here. With this being short in lines, I like looking at brevity, and then all the times that it was talking about mistakes. I mean, you know, we've all made mistakes, and it can be so hard to move past that and forgive yourself in a way. You know, so I was trying to wait to forgive yourself in the lines of the poem, and or you know, just put that touch of hope in there. And I love the line, unless I learn to cut it from my identity at the end. Brilliantly put, by the way. So yeah, and then I just took words away, and I came up with me. I learned my identity. You know, so, yeah, amazing.
Absolutely. Great observations there. Because, yeah, you're right. That end line does speak on the idea that it is important to not let our past mistakes become our complete identity. So, great comment. And, Jean, your thoughts?
Well, I really thought this was a well done piece. I really did. And I liked that you spotted right from the beginning, as the bird is looking behind it. So, you know, don't look back. That's one good piece of advice. You don't forget the lesson, but you don't look back. I thought it was nicely penned, and I thought it was a clever take on the prompt. And I started right at the top. I made one more mistake today. I looked back and I saw a past mistake smirking at me with satisfaction. One destructive mistake that survived. Friends had cautioned me years ago to never look back at my selfish past. I thought that her thoughts were well expressed, and I really enjoyed the piece. So nice work, Kind Poet. Great piece penned. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Great comments, everybody. All right. Let's see what we have next. And up next we have Immortalized at Last by Liquid Mind Forever. And it goes like this. I wish I came in as a native born on autopilot through the tundra of indecency, now expediency for craft, gaffed draft to laugh or giraffe without staff to explore daft. I wish I were an igaloo sentenced to death by Pontius Pilate. What fate awaits the sneered at, jeered at woman of distinction? After years and tears of near fears appears the queered extinction, our predilection, suffering and shame, the bane of another's existence, our consternation paid off to buy off their silent ruination's pretense. I wish I had a broken nose, curled forward, toes suppose, the nose knows which toe shows the glow of another blow of snow. I wish I could dish the dirt, become inert, tie-dyed woes. Who goes, knows the cow toe of disavow and bows to Oedipus' foes? I wish I had darker skin within and without, no doubt. I wish I had starker sins without and within the bout. I wish for a new stale light, a strong sound bite. I wish for more fish. I wish all right bite. I wish I had dog sled right, sands, the snowbeal clan, a tribal withstand of our command, new bands of financial elan. I wish, end poem. And what compelling thought-provoking imagery and metaphors throughout. And Naomi, your thoughts on this, right?
Yeah, well, you know, I find that this is a cry to exist, really. You know, I wish I wasn't going towards extinction. I wish I was recognized. I wish all these things. You know, we bought them off. We put them on reserves, and you know, we force them into these laws where they can't even own their own home on that land. You know, I don't know if that law has changed, but, you know, I doubt it. But, you know, they're on the reserves and they're on this land, which doesn't even, you know, where they can't even own property on the reserve, you know, with their own name on it. I don't know. Maybe that law has changed, but here in Canada, but that was the way it was. But, you know, I find in this poem, you know, that kind of desperation, you know, for the wanting to have their own identity, wanting to have their own place, wanting to be recognized. Anyway, that's what I got out of it. So, brilliant write by Liquid Mind Forever.
Oh, I have to agree. It is, and I like what you had to say. And I saw a lot of that, too, in the whole idea of because of the mistreatment of the Inuit culture and so many other Indigenous cultures, people are left with this emotional suffering. This idea of feeling like you said, a loss of their identity, and really great use of the repetition, which has almost like a sense of call of veration, of desire and to just have something so badly. I wish I had a darker skin within and without, no doubt. I had the starker sins without and within the bout. Great rhyme and flow. I don't know. And then the fact that there's so many references to pain, like even, you know, I wish I had a broken nose, curled forward toes, suppose the nose knows which toe shows the glow of another blow of snow. I feel like that the idea of I wish I could connect more with the land, with nature. At the same time, I think also to me, another thing it might speak on is the idea of wishing that you could connect with other people's pain. Where she says, I wish I came in as native born on autopilot through the tundra of indecency, now expediency for craft. The idea of perhaps someone who wants to be more understanding of the indigenous cultures and the pains that they have gone through. So excellent write and very well done. And CM, what thoughts does this poem bring to your mind?
Sure. Talking about all this, would like to start off by saying beautifully written. It is such a well put together piece. I wish was just used so many times, and I felt like it was, you know, calling our attention to the thoughts of the people in that time. And, you know, I wish I had dog sled rights. And in that, I think of how they're wishing for freedom because, you know, dog sleds, you know, move fast across the snow, and they're just, it's a force pulling you, and, you know, you don't have to worry about that. And I think that can also tie into I wish I came as a native born on autopilot, and how, you know, sometimes we might wish that everything was already just planned out and it'd be okay. But yeah, great poem.
Absolutely. Great observation. Very cool. And up next, I have your poem, CM. So go ahead, please, and give that a read for us.
Sure. I still have the other poem pulled up. Let me get to it real quick.
Oh, did you? Because I put up Bird Once Sat. Did you have something else that you preferred to read that was inspired by the artwork?
A Bird Once Sat is definitely that. Okay. Bird once sat, a rainbow owl of which he sat, the back a bended friend. Crazy feathers falter and they grow, falls a feather, feathered friend. Golden feathers, felted sweater of friends, together they sat on top. A time, bird once sat, fallen feathered friend.
Great read there, CM. I'm really glad that you were inspired. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, I love the alliteration throughout it and the way it flows, that I have to say first of all. You know, I get the idea of, you know, a kind of bonding, you know, of sitting together, of being together, of being together, you know, because you have the repetition of together. You have together they sat on top. Friends, you have the repetition a lot of feathered friends, you know. A time bird once sat, a fallen feathered friend. The way that maybe you're talking on, they have to bond together, they have to stick together, you know, to survive. so that their culture survives through time, because if they drift apart, well, then they're lost. And I think that's the only way that they're going to survive. You know, when you talk about the Inuit culture or the these Indian-Jewish people, you know, if they don't want, they want their culture to survive. They want to be respected. If they want to be accepted, they have to stick together. They have to bond together. They have to be strong together, and they have to fight. And, you know, so that's what I got from the poem.
Yes, yes.
I like that. I like that. Great mm-hmm. observation. And, Jean, your thoughts. Are you back with us, Jean? I guess not, so I'll go ahead and comment. Yeah, I really like what Naomi had to say, and I have to agree that there is this idea of bonding together. You know, as it says, a time bird once sat, a fallen feathered friend, that idea of being there for each other. I also really like the creativity in the words, crazy feathers falter, and they grow. And I like they falter and they grow, because it does speak on the idea that it's oftentimes when we make our mistakes that we learn and grow from those mistakes. So I definitely see the idea of the first painting in there, but I also see how you've captured a lot of her artwork, mm-hmm. which, as I had mentioned at the beginning of the show, yep, that she really focused a lot on the birds of her region. Excellent write,
yeah.
And very well done. Was there anything
yeah.
you wanted to say about your piece?
Absolutely. I took inspiration. I didn't know that I was going to write a poem for tonight's show, but I saw that there was, I wanted to see what the topic was about, so I thought I'd give it a try. And I didn't realize it until you started talking about all the loss and everything that she had been through, that's what this poem can really relate to with her is falls a feather, feathered friend, time bird once sat, a fallen feathered friend. And I saw the image once more tonight. I forgot exactly who wrote on that image, but it was the one with all the golden and the one black crow, and I noticed that they were standing on top
yep.
of a fallen bird.
Okay,
so that's
yeah.
where I got the idea from. And a lot of the things in almost all of her poems is you notice she wrote them, or not her poems, her artwork. A lot of it, it's something on top of itself. So, you know, I was thinking about how a lot of them, someone sat on top of a bird.
I like that. I like that. Really great observations on her artwork. Very cool. All right. Well, Naomi, I have put your poem up next, so please go ahead and give it a read for us.
Okay, so this is called O Ancient One, and I took the Enchanted Owl, too, which is on our stamps, linen since 1970. Under the silvery moon's watchful gaze, an owl takes flight, its wings ablaze. Wisdom glimmers in its deep black eyes, enchanting all with its captivating guise. With outstretched wings, it soars on high, windy blue and golden feathers paint the sky. Intriguing and bewitching, its presence profound, swooping through heavens without a sound. Perched on a branch in a tree so grand, it surveys the darkness of this mystical land, overlooking the night with a solemn hoot, tales of Inuit ancestors echoing through. With resilience as its guide, our courageous plight, persevering through the tundra's harsh, cold, harsh bite. In icy fields where frozen wanders reside, it glides with grace as the snow glistens beside. Under sepia moonlight, a scene engraved in time, an owl's flight, courage, and strength intertwined. O ancient one, a symbol of wisdom in legends told, etched here under an artist's hand, your story unfolds. End poem.
Great read and write, Naomi. I'm really glad you were inspired. And CM, your thoughts on Naomi's poem.
Naomi, amazing work here. I can't stop thinking about deep black eyes. It's captivating, guys. That's all I'm thinking, and I'm relating it to, you know, it's something that you would want to stare into, but you don't want to stare into the darkness for too long. And I love that it's all like gaze ablaze, deep black eyes, captivating guys. A beautiful poem, and I think I can take so much away from this to inspire to.
Thank
I
you.
I like that. Wonderful comment. Yeah, I really thought you did a great job with these beautifully written rhyme and couplets. I really enjoyed and appreciated how you paint with your words on the magic and the mysticism of the owl, and especially the owl as it connects with the Inuit culture. I really like intriguing and bewitching, its presence profound, swooping through heavens without a sound. And also with resilience as its guide, a courageous plight, persevering through the tundra's cold, harsh bite. I mean, there's such wonderful rhyme and flow in there. And the idea of the owl being a symbol of wisdom. And I like that, and how it also, I feel like this rite also pays tribute to the artist herself and her wisdom and her courage. So excellent rite here, Naomi, and very well done. Would you like to say anything about your poem?
Yeah, well, you know, I really wanted to intertwine, you know, the resilience, the courage, you know, of the Inuit people through the owl. And yeah, so that's what I wanted to do. And, you know, the courage of the artist too, as you picked up on, Pam. It was a great, great prompt. You know, I couldn't resist the writing to it. And such an awesome, you know, important subject, you know, to talk about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. All right. Up next, we have Why Birds Chose Feathers Over Branches by Thomas B. And it goes like this. There was a time when all things were a puzzle. Like any puzzle, the pieces were faced up, spread out, so the one spirit could see all the possibilities and listen to each creation's hopes and fears. For are not all things possible when things begin and beings define their expression, create their universe? Claws for paws were obvious. Butterflies to dance upon flower tops seemed to make perfect sense. The mew for cats, the bark for dogs created a melody the great one realized should be heard by all. The large were hoofed, the small given paws. The avian twittered, raptors shrieked. Songbirds preened and cooed, tried to influence what the one might think to choose. They were such narcissists and wanted to be beautiful more than any other creation they could see. They were adorned with twigs and leaves, blossoms, and dreams of beauty created envy so every creature would mourn when faced with their splendor. The Great One smiled, for he understood egos are frail, beginnings are hard, and birds were still discovering colors and what they could mean. Their claws clung to branches, and they loved the blossoms, the way leaves moved and changed colors. "We should be as beautiful," they cried, and told lies about being attached. The one spirit recognized it was time to unveil a surprise. He looked at the birds and held the prize behind his back. "No one else has this, and I wanted you to have it. It will let you fly to great heights and sparkle with the sun when the sun is just right." He smiled, and they started to jump up and down. "What is it? What is it?" They laughed, cried, and cajoled. "A feather." He took one and twirled it and added another of a different color. "I want red," shouted the cardinal. And so it came to be true. Feathers were used to define the bird's sense of what is cool. From pinions to down, they are the only ones who have feathers, and feathers that molt, feathers that plume, feathers that let them fly and zoom about like they own the skies and defy anyone who walks about. They were happy, and you could hear it in their shouts. The great one smiled and nodded at their joy. "It is always wonderful when children go along with your plans, think it is their idea, and demand that you let them have their way." End poem. And oh my goodness, what an absolutely wonderful and creative story. I really enjoyed that. And your thoughts, Naomi?
Absolutely. You know, this could be like I have the word in French, a fable. Is that it? Fable? Like, a tale, but a fable, eh? That's a word in English?
Yes.
Fable?
Yes.
Yeah, fable. You know, of how the birds came to be, you know, so colorful. Really, it could be, you know, it put down in books. It rings so true. I think Tom weaved a wonderful wonderful right here, a wonderful story told. It was engaging, enchanting, and magical, all wrapped up into one here. So captivated me completely. So beautiful job, Tom.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And Jean, are you back with us? All right. Well, I thought this, I have to agree, this is, as you said, a wonderful fable. I like how there's that lesson in it of oftentimes, you know, God or parents can look at us and guide us and influence us, and we will think we're making all the decisions on our own. I love the humor that comes through and the irony that comes through in those end lines. It is always wonderful when children go along with your plan, think it is their idea, and demand that you let them have their way. And I love the way that he brings the voices out in the different birds. Like, what is it? What is it? They laughed, cried, and cajoled. A feather, he took one and twirled it and added another of a different color. "I want red," shouted the cardinal. I mean, those are just wonderful lines. Tom really does have a gift for storytelling, you know, and I really liked this. I really liked this a lot.
Yeah.
Wonderful, right?
I concur.
Awesome. Hey, Jean.
Sorry about that. I needed to meander for a minute or three. Ugh, you know, kids, dogs. You know, the whole nine yards.
I get it.
And, you know, they don't always act the way they're supposed to at certain times. But I have to agree. I thought this was a great piece by Thomas B. The one spirit recognized it was time to unveil a surprise. He looked at the birds and held the prize behind his back. "No one else has this, and I want you to have it. It will let you fly to great heights and sparkle when the sun is just right. He smiled, and they started to jump up and down. What is it? What is it? They laughed, cried, and cajoled. A feather. He took one and twirled it and added another of a different color. And I, as Pam said, I want red, shouted the cardinal. I mean, I don't know. I just thought it was a great story. It really was all the way through. And I thought that was just a pretty neat part of it, you know, because they're just explaining that, you know, you sparkle in the sun and they help you fly. Yeah, I want feathers too. Yes, I
right?
do. I want to meet everybody here so I can throw them in the wind when I'm doing things. Just kidding. Just kidding. That sounds terrible. But yeah, it really was a great story. I just like Thomas's take on the image itself. And it's funny because when you look at the image, it's kind of like, okay, looks like she's got feathers, flowers, leaves, you know, hanging around behind her. I'm glad she took feathers. Very much better. Very much
yep.
better. Yeah,
absolutely.
So it was a good story. Yeah. Thomas, that was a fine job, and thanks for sharing with us. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Well, you know, we don't have a lot of time left, but we do have enough time to get a little bit into our next topic, but I will have quite a few carryovers for another show, which I will let people know what show they will be on. But our next topic is the Song of Uvavnuk. And Uvavnuk was an Inuit woman from Greenland who in the early 20s, I think? Well, anyway, she was actually struck by what they call the meteor, but may have been like a round ball of lightning in which she went through a transformation and she became a shaman. And she had this song that she always sang before entering people's huts to do a spiritual work or healing. And it goes by many different names, but it's called the Song of Uvavnuk or the Great Sea. It has several names. I'm going to put up a link that is one of the translations done of it. It's called The Great Sea. And since this is right up your alley, Jean, as far as length, go ahead and give that a read for us.
She's a smart ass, I say. It's called The Great Sea by Uvavnuk, yes. Translated by Jane Hirschfield. The Great Sea frees me, moves me, as a strong river carries a weed. Earth and her strong winds move me, take me away. And my soul is swept up in joy. End poem. It was right up my alley.
Great. That was, wasn't it? And I did say, you did a great read of that. I'm not going to get comments on that, but I do highly recommend that people read about Uvavnuk. She was a very fascinating character, and her spiritual journey, her life, and her transformation story are all really fascinating. So I highly recommend reading about her. And we are probably only going to do one write, and then the rest will be carryovers. But that's okay because it gives us something more to look forward to. So I
That's
put
right.
up Sound of the Sea by Jody Melton. And Naomi, would you give that a read for us, please?
Okay. The sound of the sea, beneath a sky of azure blue, by the sandy shore I stand, where the gentle waves embrace the land in this tranquil, timeless land. The song of the sea, a melody so sweet, whispers in the breeze, the generosity of nature's grace, a symphony of endless peace. The sea's soft sigh, a soothing sound, like a lover's tender touch, caresses my weary soul as I watch the horizon's gentle clutch. Each wave that rolls with graceful ease carries stories of the bold, of ancient ships and distant shores, of dreams and bottles yet to unfold. The seagulls dance in the endless sky, their cries a joyful tune, as they glide upon the ocean's breath beneath the golden moon. The sun dips low, a fiery orb, into the watery abyss, painting the world in shades of gold, a moment of stillness and pure bliss. I close my eyes and breathe it in, the salt-kissed air so sweet, as the sound of the sea surrounds me in the sacred quiet retreat. The worries of the world drift away like the foam upon the shore. I am lost in the song of the sea, forever wanting more. So let me linger here a while by the water's gentle edge, where the song of the sea will heal my soul like a soothing ancient pledge. In the rhythm of the waves, I find my peace. My heart is finally free, for in the song of the sea, I discover the essence of serenity. I take a deep breath, feel the water hit my face. I go under, relaxed, floating into space. End poem.
Wonderful read, Naomi. I really felt like Jody did a great job of capturing the spirit of the prompt. I like how he speaks on the sense of music and the sights of the sea that can and the beach that can be so relaxing and, you know, to so many people. I really like the seagulls dance in the endless sky. Their cry is a joyful tune as they glide across the ocean's breath beneath the golden moon. And then, you know, painting the world in shades of gold, a moment of stillness and pure bliss. I close my eyes and breathe it in, the salt-kissed air so sweet as the sound of the sea surrounds me in this sacred, quiet retreat. And I love his use of the word sacred, you know, because it does, there is something very sacred about nature and especially about water, you know, so wonderful, right, and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts? Are you on mute, Jean?
Of course, and I was only halfway through my comment. I'm only kidding. I wasn't quite that far. But I thought it was a beautifully penned piece, an excellent take on the poem prompt, wonderful imagery and emotions throughout, and I thought it was really well done. I was going to do the lines that you read, Pam, but something told me you were going to do that to me, so I shifted. I closed my eyes and breathe it in, the salt-kissed air so sweet, as the sound of the sea surrounds me in this sacred, quiet retreat. The worries of the world drift away like a foam upon the shore, and I am lost in the song of the sea, forever wanting more. So let me linger here a while by the water's gentle edge, where the song of the sea will heal my soul like a soothing ancient pledge. In the rhythm of the waves, I find my peace. My heart is finally free, for in the song of the sea, I discover the essence of serenity. I take a deep breath, feel the water hit my face. I go under, relaxed, floating into space. I thought it was just, it was serene. It was calming as I read it, I thought, anyway. Some people do, some people don't, but I thought he did a great job. So wonderful job, Jody, and thanks for sharing. Sorry.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, my gracious. You know, me and the sea, you know, I think 50% of my poems are about the sea and the ocean. It's like, you know, everybody knows me and the sea. But, you know, I was born on an island and I spent, you know, half my childhood there on that island on PEI, surrounded by the Gulf of the St. Lawrence, you know. And right on the Cape. And, you know, I was beside the ocean or on the ocean on a fishing boat, you know. So, you know, I have this bond to the sea. And I think Jody captured, you know, all that I felt, You know, all that I feel every time I'm close to the ocean, I'm close to water, that peacefulness, that serenity, that, you know, that just, you know, just that calmness that comes over me, you know, that envelopes me totally when I'm by the ocean. So wonderful job, Jody. And, you know, I'd comment more, but we're already finished the show. So, yeah, well, just a beautiful, beautiful write.
It really is. It really is. Great comment. And this has definitely been a wonderful show. It sparked so much conversation, great poetry. You know, I'm really always appreciative and always enjoy spending time with you two, my twisted sisters, Jean and Naomi. And thank you to CM for hanging on the board, or not hanging for, well, he also hung on the board, but thank you to CM for calling in. Thank you to Robbie and Time Poet for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, was listening while we were on live, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And Jean, was there anything you'd like to say in closing?
No, we have no After Midnight show tonight. Who's got tomorrow, you or Naomi?
Well, I guess...
Don't tell me it's me. I'll have a stroke. Okay, good. If you had said me, boy, it would have been all over.
Yeah,
it's
me and Naomi.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that. Everybody join the ladies tomorrow night, 10 to 12. And
write for the contest. I think it's still open.
It is. Yeah. There you go. We're greedy. We want lots of writes. We want lots of callers. And we want lots of company. We can all have lots of fun.
Well, twisted in that way.
I think we're just going to have to call it. Anyway, ladies, it's been great. It's been real. Enjoyed myself. Great prompts, Pam.
Absolutely.
Have yourselves a wonderful night.
Well, good night, everybody.
Good night, kids.